The marathon is a metaphor for life. You don't know what's around the next bend. You don't know when an opportunity is going to present itself. So you just have to hang in there for the long run and have the passion to persevere.
Hey everyone, Emily Abadi here. You are listening to episode 291 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I talk to inspirational people about everything from their highest highs and toughest moments to essential tips on how to live a healthier, happier, more motivated life. We all go through our fair share of hurdles, and my goal through these discussions is to empower you to better navigate yours and move with intention so that you can stride toward your own big potential and, of course, have some fun along the way. Today's episode, let's just say it, it's a pinch me moment for me. A conversation with the one, the only, Joan Benoit Samuelson. She was the first woman to ever win the Olympic marathon. For some context here, marathons were a part of the first International Olympics in 1896, but it would be almost 100 years before women were allowed to compete. And Joni gives us the rundown on all of the history in our chat today. Before 1984, there was no women's marathon category in the Olympics at all. So talk about a trailblazer here. Joan and I were both in Orlando at the same time for the Olympic marathon trials, which was outrageous within its own way and so magical because it was so clear, as someone who was in attendance, that the crowds were so lit for the women. Not to say that we weren't excited for the men, but to see the hype that surrounds women's distance running right now, as someone who identifies as a runner, it's really, really special. And it's really exciting to think about where we're going from here. Anyway, I digress. I was so fortunate to be able to sit down with Joan on this special weekend. She was a really big part of Nike's Project Dreamweaver. And I'm going to elaborate a little bit on this project because I find it so impressive. Basically, Dreamweaver supported a community of 120 women across the United States and their goal to qualify for the most competitive women's Olympic marathon trials ever assembled. In this support of the athletes, basically what they did was they gave them access to world-class Nike Sport Research Lab scientists, as well as connected them with women's marathon legends and Olympians like Joni, Shalane Flanagan, and Kira D'Amato. And I know a lot of jargon here, but out of the women, 120 women, as I mentioned, that were supported, 15 of them made it to the trials, got that qualifying time, and towed the starting line in Orlando. And it was so bone-chilling, truly, to watch these superstars chase their big potential. Like, I don't have the same aspiration to run at this super impressive speed, but to see them just chasing something so special and leveling up and supporting one another, oh, I still have chills just thinking about it. Anyway, Joni, absolute legend. I was so interested to hear more about Project Dreamweaver from her. You can get more information on that. I'll link the Nike News article in the show notes. And then, of course, talk to Joni about so many things, so much wisdom to dispel here on everything from navigating injury and longevity. This woman has run a sub 3 hour marathon in 5 consecutive decades. She is still lacing up and getting out there. We joked in today's conversation about running Tokyo together. I don't have confirmation on whether or not she's towing the starting line next week. But what I do know is that if Joni wants to run a marathon together, she's just got to tell me when and where to show up and I'm game. She also elaborates on her recovery practices, how she was able to encourage her family to get active in sport, what it was like to grow her family as she chased her big goals as an athlete. and how much the culture of sport has changed. Like I said, the first woman to ever win the Olympic marathon. So much has happened for women in sport since she first laced up all those years ago. And the technology also so much more advanced than it was back then. And trust me, she's got an opinion on all of it. Make sure, if you're not doing so yet, you're following along with Hurdle over on social. It's at Hurdle Podcast. I am also over at Emily Abadi. And if you're not yet subscribed to the weekly Hurdle newsletter, I'd love for you to get that in your inbox. It comes out every single Friday. It's absolutely free. Another fun way for us to connect, me giving you my gear picks, the things that I'm loving, what I'm watching, listening to, and so many other things that you love about the show. And with that, let's get to it. Let's get to hurdling. Today, I have the honor of sitting down with Joan Benoit Samuelson. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
And you?
I'm
after
good.
Your 18 miles this morning?
Joan, this podcast is not about me. It's about you.
But it could be about us.
It could be about both of us.
Especially if we both go to Tokyo to get our Abbott 6 stars.
I just want to preface this for everyone listening at home. Joan just asked me if I wanted to run Tokyo together. What an opportunity.
It's an opportunity for me.
Oh my God. She's sweet talking me. She wants me to go easy on her. We're here in Orlando right now, the weekend of the Olympic marathon trials, something that you are quite familiar with, the Olympic marathon. How does it feel for you to be here this weekend?
I'm delighted to be here. It's really energizing to be in the city right now with all the athletes who will be vying for positions for the Olympic team in Paris.
So much has changed, right, since your heyday, if you want to call it that.
Okay, age me. 40 years, is that what you mean?
You said it, not me.
And your demographic isn't even 40, or 40 is the mean age? Is that what you're telling me?
They're up there.
So maybe I have some wisdom to share with you?
I know that you have some wisdom to share. Oh, please. I wasn't trying to downplay how amazing you are. I'm sitting down with a legend, truly. And when this opportunity came my way, it was truly a shrieking worthy moment for me. I was so excited to have the chance to sit down with you, especially because we are surrounded by so many people this weekend that are chasing their big potential, something that you know so much about.
A little bit. But I'm particularly excited to be here with Nike and the Project Dreamweavers.
Yeah.
Because I always tell people and have to follow their hearts and live their dreams. And that's exactly what all the women will be doing here tomorrow.
Talk to me a little bit about Project Dreamweaver for those that don't know about it.
Well, Project Dreamweavers is a Nike project, a bunch of women who have the passion, which is very important, and the heart to give it their best shot with their training in order to become the best runners they can become and to try to achieve the Olympic trials qualifying time. And I think we have 14 Dreamweavers here who have really come from, actually, I think there's 16 Dreamweavers. And that's actually my favorite number because my birthday is on the 16th of a month. And for me, getting past mile 16 in the marathon and feeling good is critical. So it's a magic number,
yeah.
And it'll be a magical number for all the women and men who will be out here running tomorrow.
For sure, for sure. How does it feel for you to be in the position you are now within Nike, but also beyond Nike, having this opportunity to, you know, foster young talent and be the example for so many? We always say, in order to be her, you need to see her, and you have been the example.
Well, I really like hanging around with the younger runners because they keep me young and they keep me in the game and they keep me inspired. Sometimes I refer to myself as the mother hen of the Nike den because I've been around the block so many times. But, you know, it's a two-way road. We all have something to gain from each other. And I think the most important part of our sport is the community that develops around running. And if you have a body, you can be a runner. And whether you're in a wheelchair running or whether you're walking with whatever you need to move, it's just important that you're out there and doing it and giving it your best shot.
Yeah. I mean, community has certainly ebbed and flowed within the sport over time. And when you started looked dramatically different than it does now. All of these women vying for a spot on Team USA. Give us some insight into what it was like for you to be one of the first in this sport going after these kind of big dreams.
Well, first of all, I have to give credit to the woman who preceded me in sport. And I hesitate to mention names because there were several women in this community. But Roberta Gibb, who was the first woman to run the Boston Marathon, followed by Catherine Switzer. And then there was Jacqueline Hansen, who really pushed Nike and the IOC to encourage the inclusion of the marathon. And then Nina Cusick, who was part of the sit down in front of the New York City Marathon years ago when they didn't allow women to run. So I owe a debt of gratitude to all those women. But then when I was in high school, track and field wasn't a sport for a woman. The so-called experts in sport thought if a woman ran more than 1,500 meters or the mile, she'd do bodily harm and never be able to bear children. Well, 150,000 plus miles, two children, and now two grandchildren later, I'm still at it and still enjoying it as much as I did way back when.
Right, because your high school at first had a track club for women, right?
Right.
Okay.
A club. It wasn't even recognized. Track and field wasn't recognized by the State Principals Association. So my high school sports were field hockey, basketball, where I warmed the bench. Occasionally, I'd get moved up from JV to varsity, but I was a skier. So the coach didn't like the fact that I was skiing on the weekend, so he benched me a lot. And then I played a lot of tennis in my youth because, again, track and field wasn't available. And then in 1972, at the end of my first year in high school, Title IX legislation passed. And that started to open the floodgates for women and girls to participate in sports. So really, I came around at the right time. And it's very coincidental or serendipitous that Title IX passed the same year that Nike became a company.
Yeah. Do you remember how it felt to be a woman as more and more people were becoming familiar with seeing women be active, with having girls' sports teams, perhaps when they weren't previously there? Was there resistance to that?
Well, I grew up with three brothers, and I was always carted around to their different sports. And there wasn't really a lot of opportunity for me in the conventional sports world. I remember hanging over the chain link fence at my brother's baseball games in the middle of the summer when they didn't have enough players to field the team and they played short. And I was just leaning over, hoping the coach would say, okay, come on in and play. But that never, ever happened. And so I just hung in there. You know, you have to hang in there in the marathon and you have to hang in there in life. And the marathon is a metaphor for life. You don't know what's around the next bend. You don't know when an opportunity is going to present itself. So you just have to hang in there for the long run and hope and, you know, have the passion to persevere.
You mentioned loving skiing as well. I know that in pursuit of what you love, you certainly face some injuries starting there that have then continued with you over time, and especially to that oh-so-important Olympic marathon trials. Bring me into your shoes. You're gearing up for the Olympic marathon trials. You're not in your quote-unquote best body. How did that feel for you?
I ran the Olympic trials in Olympia on a wing and a prayer 40 years ago in May, and I was running for Athletics West at the time, the Nike-subsidized elite club, and I was training in Maine, where I was the most comfortable training, where I grew up and where I live today, but I needed help. I needed somebody who knew biomechanics to try to get me over that hurdle, and I went out there asking for help. And I worked with the sports physio for the club, and he couldn't help me, but there was a very good surgeon in town, and he agreed to see me and a long story became a short story when he agreed to do the arthroscopic surgery 17 days before the trials. And so I underwent the surgery. It was successful, but at first I didn't think it was successful because it was supposed to be ambulatory day surgery, and I wound up in a hospital room. But when he came in after the surgery, he said, "Are you surprised to be here?" And I said, "Yes, I guess the Olympic marathon trials are a no-go for me." And he said, "Not really." He said, "Your reputation has preceded you. I knew if I discharged you today, you'd go out and test it tonight. So I'm going to keep you here for a full 24 hours. And then I did test it the following night, and it worked. And then I agreed to do a 17-mile run with Lisa Martin, who was representing Australia in the Olympics and had gone to the University of Oregon and was training out there. And I said, if I can go that distance, then I'll go to Olympia and run. And I covered the distance and I went to Olympia, and the rest is sort of history, I guess.
Wow. Even the thought of getting surgery one day and then going out for any sort of test run the next day, nevertheless, in the weeks that would follow racing a distance like the marathon. When you look back at that Olympic trials, would you say that that was one of the most difficult moments of your career?
Well, I always tell people when asked what was the race of my life, it was the Olympic trials. That was the race of my life. My biggest win was in the Olympic Games in 84, but I still can't tell you how I got through the trials that close to the competition. And I guess I just believe that nobody was training any harder than I was at the time. And I loved my training. It wasn't sacrificial training. It was passionate training because I absolutely loved it. And I thrived on running longer and longer and faster in my training runs. And yeah, I guess you just have to believe in yourself. And when I was sort of discounted, like, she's not going to be a contender in LA, that's when I really got hungry, because Life magazine was going to do a feature story on me. And then when they heard about the arthroscopic surgery, they did a whole portfolio of athletes. And then there was a little inset of me drinking tea out of a mug in a Lon's nightgown. Like, oh, poor Joan, she's not going to be able to compete.
Yeah.
That added fuel to my fire. I always love being the underdog.
How could it not add fuel to your fire? And the fact that, did they even reach out to you for comment? Or
no.
Did they hear that you were getting the surgery and they counted you out?
Oh, it probably went to publication and messaging wasn't received or whatever.
When you say that that race was the race of your life, is it because that there was so much unknown?
So much unknown. And actually, when it came down to the trial date, it wasn't the knee that I was concerned about. It was the opposing hamstring, because I was favoring the knee so much, I didn't believe it was going to hold up. And that opposing hamstring is what almost kept me out of the trials.
Wow. Well, I know that the knee, the hamstring, those are just some of the things that you have navigated in terms of injury over your lengthy career. So many people listening to this right now have certainly navigated their fair share of hurdles when it comes to injury. How do you frame your mindset when it comes to navigating the things that you feel as though you have no control over, like injury?
Well, I guess you just have to believe in yourself and what you're capable of and have goals. And there are always opportunities to compromise those goals. And you have to sort of block that out. It's okay to set intermediate goals, but don't compromise your goals. And I think that I just block out all the negativity that I can. I don't get distracted easily. I'm able to focus. I think where I really honed my skills on that was when I was coaching at Boston University and would train along the Charles River and try to keep pace with the shells on the river. And the rhythm, that was really helpful.
Yeah. You mentioned running over 150,000 miles in your career. For you, in running those miles, what would you say has been the through line that you take from sport through to your life?
There are no shortcuts in life. You've got to put in the work. You've got to have the patience. You have to face the challenges. I mean, it's all in the marathon, right?
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, marathoning is a metaphor for life.
Marathoning is a metaphor for life. You said that Olympic trials was such a big moment for you. clearly the podcast called Hurdle. Reflecting on your running career, what would you say has been perhaps your most proud moment of something else that you've overcome thus far?
Well, just sort of as a sidebar, when I was in high school, we had a cinder track, and I did try the hurdles once, and I tripped up miserably and still have cinder in the palm of my hand from that accident.
I've only once tried a hurdle event, like an actual hurdling thing. It was actually with Nike, and I fell on my face. So,
but the other thing about that track was the infield grew into the track. So you were really long running longer than a 400 or a 440. So, but I always counted as a 440. So I was actually running slower than I truly was in my split times. So never take shortcuts.
Never take shortcuts. And now you have cinder in your hand for all time, but a memory of overcoming a difficult hurdle.
Right. And, you know, I started with the sprints, the 100 and the 50 and the long jump. And then when I broke my leg, I didn't trust my leg to hold up in a long jump. And I couldn't run fast enough to do the sprint. So that's when I went to middle distance, which led to longer distances because the mile wasn't accepted in high school competition until my junior year.
Yeah. You spoke about having a relentless self-belief, let's say it, when it comes to navigating injury. But in an instance like that, where we're talking about really being down and out, what advice do you have to offer to someone who may be in a similar scenario?
Just not to lose sight of your goals and to understand that there are lessons that are very valuable in the disappointments and in the frustrations. And you have to be patient in the marathon. And I sure hope the runners tomorrow are patient given the heat and the conditions here in Orlando.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to pass runners than it is to be passed in the final stages. And I think that holds true for life too. You have to be patient. If something doesn't come to you immediately, or you're frustrated because of a challenge in the workplace or a challenge with your training or your family, you just have to wait it out and believe and keep your focus. Keep your eye on the pie.
Eye on the pie. And you certainly had your eye on the pie when it came to the 1984 Olympics. Bring us there. Bring us there with you. When you reflect on that day, what are some of the first things that come to mind?
It was a gray day, and I just didn't know what the cards would hold. And I was staying with a family in Santa Monica, just off the marathon course that ran down San Vicente Boulevard onto Ocean Boulevard. And I remember seeing a runner out on the roads right 2 days before the marathon. And I said to my coach, who was coaching me at the time, Bob Seveny, I said, I don't know who that was running out on the roads, but she was surrounded by an entourage of people. And she looked like she might be a marathoner from another country. And whoever she is, I think she's going to win a medal. And, you know, the favorite was the late, great Greta Weitz and her teammate, Ingrid Christensen. And then there was Rosa Moda, who that woman was. And she did. She won the bronze. Mm-hmm. And then she went on to Seoul to win the gold.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you can tell a book by its cover.
Do you think that because of what you went through with your knee, that people had really counted you down and out for the day of?
I think they did, but then when I made the team, I think they said they should have thought she means business in LA.
They should have thought. But it seems as though, because you say it that way, that you had an idea that that wasn't necessarily the case.
Well, I knew I was an underdog. Mm-hmm. I knew I was on home soil. I knew a lot of my family and friends were going to be there. And that's all I really needed.
That's all you needed. When it comes to the way that people support you or where you garner your inspiration from, what was the guiding force or the thing that lifted you up as you went through your career?
I just think family and support. It was very important in our family that we all show up at the dinner table. And that's sort of a lost tradition in many families today. And I think nothing escapes a family when everybody's seated together. I mean, if somebody's troubled by something or something's not right, it bubbles to the top over dinner. And I think that's something we need to think more seriously about bringing back. I think sometimes technology and screen time gets in the way of that. And, you know, I will give my mother a ton of credit because dinner was always served promptly at 6, but I always wanted to sneak in a second workout. So she did move it back to 6:15.
Supporting
she
you
knew
your
how
goals.
Valuable, how much the running meant to me. But she was also the person who said to me when I did my lap with the flag around the Coliseum, leaning over, she said to me, "Now, can you quit?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, you've put me through a lot." And I said, "Yeah, but Mom, I still have goals I want to achieve." And she supported me all the way to the end. She died 15 days shy of her 95th birthday, so she had a wonderful long life and held the dinner hour for me and always was concerned about my knees. And shortly after she passed, I had a partial knee replacement. So that's another reason I want to get to Tokyo to run with you.
Hey, that lap around the stadium, such a special moment for you. What changed after that day?
Well, I came through the tunnel, or I was in the middle of the tunnel, and it was dark, and I was all alone. And I was wondering if anybody would be in the Coliseum because it was the first time the women's marathon was being held. And it was a Sunday morning, and I said, "Who's going to come out and watch a bunch of women run for the first time?" A lot of the pundits thought women wouldn't be able to do that exercise. And when I came into the light, I saw the crowd. I actually heard the crowd before I got into the light. And I said, "Whoa, there are people in there." And I said to myself, "Don't let this moment in time change the person you are. And make sure you give back to a sport and a community that have given you so much." And that's what led to the founding of the Beach to Beacon 10K in my hometown of Cape Elizabeth with the help of Nike and other sponsors. And the other thing in LA that I couldn't forget was I'd run a half marathon in San Diego the previous fall. And I was told that there was a bigger-than-life mural of me on one of the apartment buildings in Watts. Did I want to see it? And I thought that might be a bad omen to look at it before the marathon. Should I make the team? Because that wasn't a given. And then I saw this Nike mural, and that's what kept me going through the hardships with the knee. I said, "Here is a company that has supported me from the beginning of my career and put this amount of faith in me. I can't disappoint."
Yeah.
And I grew up not wanting to disappoint family or friends or teachers or coaches. And that's deep in your gut and in your heart.
Yeah. And that's understandable, right? You want to show up in whatever way you feel capable of for the people that make you feel seen, that make you feel valuable. It's why you talked so passionately about wanting to be there for dinner for your mom. You didn't want to disappoint her, but you also had expectations and hopes for yourself. So combining those two at times can prove to be difficult. You talk so highly of family, and I'm so lucky that I get the opportunity to talk to so many up-and-coming athletes these days as well. So many of them talking about the sacrifices that they have had to make as they pursue their goals. I mean, talking about this weekend, having sat down previously with Kira D'Amato and then Emily Sisson, and I believe both of them talking so beautifully and vulnerably about how the sport has impacted their family. For you, aside from these dinners with your family, what was it like for you to try to prioritize sport and also your personal life?
Well, I refer to my career in two phases, BC and AD, before children and after diapers. And it used to be that I scheduled my day around my running before I had kids. And then I scheduled my running around my day after I had children. And I think that was the biggest difference. And you just have to reset and reschedule. I remember, this is one poignant story. I'm an avid gardener. I love to feel the good earth. I love to grow what we eat when I can. And with climate change, the growing season, unfortunately, is getting longer and longer. But I remember being out there with our son, who was a newborn, and our daughter, who was about 2.5 at the time. And she was out there with her little rake and trowel. And our son was in the little rockaroo. My daughter had her babies, too, in her carriage and said, "Mom, do you mind watching my babies while I go for a run?" And I said, "No, go ahead. Enjoy it." And she ran around the house and came back. She said, "Mom, I hate to ask you this, but if you watch my babies a little bit longer, I can go to a meeting and then go to the grocery store and run a few errands." And I said, fine with me. Off she went, and then she came back, and she said, Mom, I'm not going to run anymore. And I knew what she was going to say, because it's every mother's guilt, I think. What do you think she was going to say? You tell me.
She was going to tell you that she felt bad having to leave the family.
Right.
Yeah.
And I said, if she says this, my career, as I've known it, is over. And she said, Mom, I don't know if I told you this, but I'm nursing these babies and my boobs are killing me.
No.
So I just breathed the greatest sigh of relief. And I said, phew.
Yeah.
But had she said what you said,
yeah,
that would have been hard. So it's so great here at the trials in Orlando to see so many young moms and to see the families that have joined them, whether they're partners or spouses or whomever, and the parents, and in some cases, grandparents supporting the participants who will be running here. I mean, our sport has evolved in a very good way.
Yeah, and especially within women's distance running, more and more women, I guess, technically getting older, although like arguing how old is quote unquote old, but women as they're aging and still excelling so much in sport, it's such a beautiful thing to see. You know, you made such great waves for paving the way for women to be heard, be seen in sport. And now these women are doing it in their own right in such a beautiful way to say, I can have a family and I can still chase after my dreams. And that's remarkable.
And they're happily accepting the baton and moving it forward, which is great. And just to see the support that these women are receiving and to see the passion. And, you know, it's not only the up and coming younger runners, it's the woman who might have had the opportunity to play sports in high school and college, then had children and didn't think they could run or participate in competitions. And then they've discovered the sport. So you see these masters runners and senior runners who are running unbelievably fast times.
Yeah.
And they keep me going as well as the younger runners.
Well, and as does your family. I know that you have now run a few marathons with your daughter. How does it feel for you to be able to share your joy of running with your family?
Well, more importantly, it makes me happy to see the joy she has for the sport. And now she has a daughter, so I look forward to running if Charlotte decides that she wants to run. Charlotte's the granddaughter who's feisty as heck. You know, to run three generations and just to have it as a lifelong pursuit.
Yeah. Speaking of generations, you have run a sub-3-hour marathon in 5 consecutive decades. I don't know if anybody else can say something like that.
I think there's a guy or two, but, you know, I really wanted to make it 6 decades. And, you know, the sub-220 marathon eluded me, and the sub-3 in 6 decades probably will, but the passion hasn't lost its fire. And the fact that I can still run with everything I've been through and still enjoy it as much as I did 50 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a gift.
What do you think is the secret sauce that keeps you running?
Passion.
Yeah.
And endorphins.
And endorphins. Both are important to the recipe, right?
Yes.
Are you a music runner?
Or no.
Do you, nothing?
No, I'm sorry to say. I run unplugged.
Oh, I mean, I think that's great.
You know, I love to be one in nature, and nature is hurting right now. And
yeah.
I like to be cognizant of changes in the environment and know what's going on out there, especially where I do a lot of my training on the coast of Maine, where erosion and rising sea levels and storm surges are a real issue. We didn't have these problems 20, 30 years ago, but it's happening.
And as it's happening, I know so often when stuff like this is going on, it's like we want to take it upon ourselves to do something about it. What do you find that you're compelled to do about it?
I try to curb the carbon footprint as much as I can at home. And if we all did a little bit, I think it would be helpful. But I think we need, especially as a population of runners, as a community of runners, need to raise the awareness of ambient air quality changes, ocean acidification, lake eutrophication. I mean, we all love to run in beautiful places, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's save the beautiful places, whatever.
Yeah. And even like talking about this right now, right? Like you and I just having this conversation, which then reaches other people. It's an opportunity for you to use your platform to speak out about something that you really are passionate about.
Well, you know, we grew up with parents who were concerned about making do with what you had. And a lot of us make do with more than we should have. And I try to think about that every day.
Taking a break from today's episode to talk to you about my sponsors. First up, my very good friends at Bandit Running. Yep, they are back in the mix. And if you're a longtime hurdler, you already know that Bandit's a regular in my outfit rotation. And if you're not familiar with Bandit, they're a Brooklyn-based apparel brand, and they make some of the highest quality, most stylish performance and lifestyle running gear you can find anywhere. They just released their brand new spring collection last week, and it is insane. That's an understatement. There's a ton of new pieces, beautiful spring colorways, and the highlight for me are two of their new fabrics. The first, it's a ribbed compression. It comes in bras and crops and 5-inch and 7-inch bottoms. You know, I am a 7-inch girly. I won't lie. I have one of each and I'm kind of obsessed. And the second fabric I want to talk about is the new cool slick shorts. They're fully perforated, so they're light and airy and breathable. And no matter how much you sweat, they stay dry, which, yeah, that's a definite yes from me. I don't know how it works, but it does, and you need to try it. Head on over to banditrunning.com and use code HURDLER15 for 15% off your first order now, in store and online through April 16th. Again, that code for 15% off your first order, it's HURDLER15, HURDLER15, at Bandit Running, BANDITRUNNING.com. Also, have to give some love to AG1. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. And that's why for the last handful of years, I want to say six now, I have been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions, even when I'm on the road. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel energized and focused and strong and ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and so much more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm giving my body the high quality nutrition that it needs. Every single batch goes through a rigorous testing process, so you know it's safe. If there is one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1 today. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/hurdle. Again, that's drinkag1.com/hurdle. I just put 14 travel packs in my suitcase to head on over to Tokyo. Trust me, you won't regret it. Go ahead. Check it out. I do want to shift gears a little bit. I know that you are, as we've established, a longtime Nike athlete now, and you have so much gratitude for the brand. Tell me a little bit about what that means to you and also what the experience really has been like for you. How has it evolved as your role has evolved with the brand over the years?
Well, I remember product that very few people in the company remember today. And I remember my favorite shoe when I was training for the Olympic trials in 84 was a shoe called the Daybreak. And it was an ugly shoe. It was tan with an orange swoosh. And they had discontinued the shoe about the same time that I was gearing up after the knee for the Olympics. And I said, what am I going to do without my shoe? And an angel from somewhere came down on a doorstep with a big box of Daybreaks. I think they were sourced in Brazil, and it got me through. I still have a couple of pairs that I haven't worn yet. But I mean, the technology advancements have been great for the athletes, but never forget your roots. Never forget where you come from, because some of my favorite apparel to this day is apparel that I had as a young runner. And one of my favorite pieces, and Nike DNA came and took a lot of my stuff, which my children were very happy about because they don't want to be saddled with all the stuff I've collected over the years. But I do have this orange fluorescent hoodie, and my mother sewed fluorescent orange stripes on the front side and a big X. This was before the reflective running vest, mind you. And they wanted to take that piece, but I couldn't let that one go.
This sounds like something my dad would do as well. Like, I want you to be seen.
Safety
I think
first.
He definitely bought me like one too many neon yellow items from Costco to wear on my morning runs. I'm an early morning runner myself.
And then I remember my mother sewing a Bowdoin singlet. I went to Bowdoin College and I wanted to wear the college singlet my senior year. And it was a men's jersey because there wasn't a girls' team, right? And
right.
So, and I still, she tacked up the shoulders and with red thread on the black. So I wouldn't let that go either. There are a few sentimental pieces, but, you know, the technology that has taken place since my early days to this day, you know, to put on the Vaporflies or the Alpha Flies, you can do anything with those shoes.
Overwhelmed by it, a little bit different than those Daybreaks. I think the thing
those Daybreaks, I mean, they look like, there's cement. I mean, it's crazy. But then I was shown the track spikes that they ran in the 1920s by this equipment manager in the Bowdoin cage, which is where we picked up our equipment. And I said, how did people run in those shoes? If I brought in my Daybreaks, I'd say, how the heck did you run in those shoes?
Yeah.
And anyway.
But at the time, they made you feel capable, right? And I think that's the through line with even as technology evolves, as the product evolves, people lean into their favorite items because those are the things that make them feel like the best version of themselves.
Right. But the most important thing is to be comfortable in what it is you're wearing. And Nike takes the feedback from the athlete seriously. Listen to the voice of the athlete. And they do.
Yeah. And so, as I said, you have been with the company for some time now, and your role has evolved with the company for some time now. Talk to me about how involved you are these days and what it feels like for you to still have a seat at this table.
Well, I just feel like I have a lot of institutional knowledge, you might say. And I'm into this cold water swimming, you know, and I had an old pair of boots on at the beach. A lot of my friends wear hoodies and gloves and booties. No, that's cheating. So you have to go in just with a bathing suit, period.
Okay.
He said, well, why aren't you in Nike shoes? And I said, because you discontinued the Aqua socks. So I'm honest with them and I think they appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I call them on things and they listen and they, you know, like all athletes try to be better athletes and better people. Mm-hmm. They try to be Nike's tries to be a better company.
Yeah.
I don't want to say they, we.
we, you're part of it. Yeah. And I laugh when you talk about the cold swimming you do. We won't even call it plunging because
it's swimming.
You're swimming.
2 minutes, minimum.
2 minutes minimum. And this is why you're still running.
It's helped. It really has.
Yeah. What does that, what else would you say?
My family and friends think I'm numb as a hake, but.
What else would you say your routine looks like these days? What does.
Coffee.
Coffee. Oh, what, is there anything
in
the coffee?
I didn't start drinking coffee until I was 50.
Oh, not that long ago.
No.
Okay.
Well, yeah, sort of.
But in addition to the coffee, let's say holistically your wellness routine, you have the cold swimming and obviously the running, but how else do you take care of yourself these days?
I cross train a lot. You know, I won't mention any names, but I do have an indoor bicycle.
Okay.
And I like to chase the leaderboard. And if there's any woman over 40 ahead of me or any guy over 50, I go after them. And yeah, I like to do that. And that saves the pounding on my joints. And and I do a lot of Nordic skiing. And people think I lift weights because I have some definition in my upper arms. And I never lift weights. I just, everything I do is holistic.
Everything.
Gardening, skiing, running, swimming. No shortcuts, no
cheating. I need to know what time you get on this indoor bicycle that should not be named so that I could strategically get on my indoor bicycle that should not be named and
I'm
we can bike together.
I'm off the radar. But, who do you like? We can talk about that.
We'll talk about that offline.
I usually have my coffee on the days that I'm not running, but now I'm sort of getting hungry, especially knowing that you're thinking about Tokyo.
Yeah.
And now I I do two things in a day sometimes.
Oh, you're doubling
up. I ride and I, well, sometimes three.
Wow.
Ride, swim, and run.
Well, it sounds like you're really dipping into triathlete territory.
I've done one.
One. Mm-hmm. And when was that?
When I turned 50.
Okay. So how did you feel about that?
I felt like I want to do another one.
Okay. Is that what we're going to do?
None of this Iron Man stuff.
No, okay.
No. That tears down the body.
Because I could be down with that if you wanted to plan that instead.
Okay, we can do that.
We can do both.
Yeah. Lake Placid.
Well, okay. I think the thing that I'm so interested to know, because you have been you've lived such an active life for such a long time and you're still after it. And so I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, aside from having passion, what else is it that keeps you motivated to keep showing up day in and day out? What are your secrets to still being able to be so excellent in your pursuit of your own excellence?
Well, I think it's just a joie de vie, a real love for life. And I think that there was a, rabbi by the name of Kushner, I think it was Robert Kushner, who wrote a couple of books. And one of them was titled When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And another one was When Everything Is Not Enough, or something like that. And I sort of took from those books the fact that patients who are diagnosed with terminal illnesses start to live every day like it's their last day. And I've been doing that for years.
Mm.
I never take a day as for granted. But it's come back to haunt me because now we have a granddaughter who doesn't stop. And I think it's genetic because I had a father who didn't stop.
Yeah.
And he was an exercise fiend before exercise was in vogue.
I guess what I want to dig into really is the mentality that comes with this, in that you feel as though you don't want to take a day for granted, right? Mm-hmm. So what thoughts do you have in relation to that? How do you show up regularly with this mindset? Like, where does your head go?
It's just innate. It just happens.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't run anybody else's race. You have to run your own race.
Yeah.
And that's what I've told to many of my friends who are running tomorrow. You know what you have inside you. There's not a darn thing you can do about the weather. There's not a darn thing you can do about your competitor's game plan. You can just do what you can do, and you can do a lot.
And you can do a lot. For you, how do you feel about how far women have come in sport in general? I know we've talked about specifically within women's running, but so much has changed for women holistically. So how are you feeling about where women are in sport right now?
I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. I don't think we're there yet. I think we need more screen time. I think we need more digging into the stories that really inspire others, because God knows in this world where mental health is a real issue, people need to be inspired and people need to know that they can do things like running.
Yeah. Who inspires you, Joni?
Everybody I come in touch with. All my friends, all my family. There were very few role models for me in life growing up because sports really weren't there for a woman, but I certainly was familiar with Billie Jean King and many of the ski racers. I mean, these are the women who played the sports, who went out there for us to be where we are today.
Yeah. How does it feel for you to be that woman for so many other people?
I don't feel like that woman. I feel like those women are there for me. They're keeping me in the game.
Yeah. Do you have like a secret group chat with women like Billie Jean King? Like, is there a place where you all squat up and like talk about the future of women's sports?
No.
I feel like in my head,
posse's right here in this room.
The posse's in the room. I love to hear that. What excites you right now, Joni?
Tomorrow's race.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're going to send a great team to Paris, and I'm just happy to be here to witness it all and hopefully congratulate the people who will be representing the United States. And, you know, everybody here will do a great job if chosen or if they make the podium and have the opportunity to go to Paris. And it's going to be a great Olympics. It has to be.
It has to be.
It has to be to lift this world.
Yeah. That's a really beautiful point. I know it's so funny. You're so humble. And I think it's absolutely beautiful. I talk to you and say, you're such an inspiration for so many. And you immediately say, I am so inspired by them, right? So clearly so many look to you as an inspiration. But when you look in the mirror, what is it that you see looking back at you?
how the heck have you stayed in the game so long? I mean, I feel like I'm 30 something or 40 something, except for a bad knee and all the age spots on my face, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, age is just a number, and fitness and wellness and health are free. They're open to everybody. All the activities that can make a person healthy are available.
Yeah.
Don't question yourself. If it's in your heart, if it's in your gut, just do it. Just go out and give it a try. Do it.
Yeah.
You know, don't hold back. And I held back. I mean, when I first started running, I was a tomboy. And I was trying to shed that tomboy image. I grew up in a neighborhood full of boys with three brothers. All I wanted to do was run on the roads. And what I would do is walk to an abandoned army post near our house and get inside the gates where, at the time, no vehicular traffic was allowed. And I'd run to my heart's content. Then I'd go to the gates and walk home. And if I decided that I had to get home to do something or I was going to be late, I might pretend I was picking flowers or returnable bottles along the roadside. But then I said, what the heck? I don't care what anybody thinks about me. I love what I'm doing and I'm going to do it. And so that's what I'm telling people. I founded the Beach to Beacon in my hometown, as I said. I love to watch the elite athletes from around the world come in. But my favorite moment is standing at the finish line, watching the people who have been pulled off the sidelines because they've been inspired by watching, you know, previous races. They question themselves. They say, do you think I could do it? And I say, just do it. And these are the people that never thought they could go the distance. Go the distance in running, go the distance in their workplace, go the distance in their family, go the distance in their community, whatever it is. And that brings us back to the marathoning as a metaphor for life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. I'm so happy that we were able to sit down today together. And I'm so amped to see you by my side in Tokyo. And then obviously when we do the Lake Placid triathlon. Before I let you go today, Joni.
Let's just get to Tokyo first.
Deal. That's fine. That works for me. Right now, you have an opportunity to offer yourself a piece of advice, knowing what you know now, looking back on that moment when you showed up for the Olympic trials with so much uncertainty in your corner. What would you tell yourself looking back on that moment?
Patience is a virtue, and you need to practice patience much more than you do today, than I do today.
Oh, man. Well, thank
you. I'm not a very patient person. I want to see things like that. But patience is such a valuable tool, and it will be tomorrow in this race. You wait and see.
You wait and see. So happy we were able to do this. For those that want to follow along with you and garner more wisdom and tips from you as they go on in their journeys, how do they keep up with you? How do they follow along with you?
I hold my cards close to my chest. Come run with me.
Come run. Perfect. I'll see you in Tokyo. I'm over at Emily Abadi and at Hurdle Podcast. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.